to the hearing on the main ordinance and resolutions. Let's continue the hearing on the main part of the plan from September 7th. Carla, can you read the ordinance and resolution titles, please, for items number 22 to 24?
Mm-hmm. Item 1022, adopt the Central City 2035 plan, amend the comprehensive plan map, transportation system plan, Willamette Greenway Plan, Willamette River Greenway Inventory, Scenic Resources Protection Plan, Zoning Map, and Title 33, repeal and replace prior Central City plans and documents. 1023, adopt the Central City 2035 Plan Action Charts, Performance Targets, and Urban Design Diagrams. And 1024, adopt the Central City 2035 Plan Green Loop Concept Report.
Very good. Sally, could you come up and introduce this part of the hearing, please? Good afternoon again.
Yes, good afternoon. So this hearing, this continued hearing, will be on the main part of the plan, as Carla mentioned, plus the package of amendments that we had last week. We've updated that package to include Commissioner Udaly's amendments, and there are copies of this document out on the table up front. We have some invited testimony today from at least six people, and then staff from PBOT are available to answer any questions that you might have after
that. Very good. And the first individual is Carmen Foray on behalf of Governor Brown. Thanks, Carmen. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. It's an honor to be invited to be here to speak on behalf of Governor Kate Brown. I'm Carmen Foray. I'm the Senior Director for Federal Affairs and Transportation in her office. And I know you're having a conversation around transportation in general for the city, and you're also aware that the state recently passed a very robust transportation package, House Bill 2017, at the end of this last legislative session. I also know you requested Representative McLean to come up and speak as well, and I'm going to leave more of the details about the bill itself and the elements within the bill for her remarks. And what I'll do is maybe tee up how we got to the point to get the legislation passed in 2017. The conversation around the need for improvements in transportation looking statewide really started in 2014. Governor Kitzhaber formed what ultimately became known as the Governor's Transportation Vision Panel. We invited a group of business leaders, civic leaders, and legislators from around the state to, you know, answer a few questions, you know, and kind of stripping away the things that would normally stand in one's way when looking at transportation investments. And the questions were, give us a vision, what should Oregon's transportation system look like in 30 years? And as part of that endeavor, you look at all modes of transportation. We're a very diverse state. We have very diverse topography, from surface ports to maritime ports, roads, bridges, rail. But where do we want to be going in the next 30 years? Craft a vision. And then as part of that effort, do a four-year sort of action plan. How do we start making the steps in the right direction in order to achieve that vision? So over the course of about 18 months, and Governor Kate Brown, when she came into office, sustained the effort to complete the Vision Panel's work, we had a series of meetings with subject matter experts, stakeholders, you know, very robust public process looking at a broad array of transportation modes. They developed a series of findings, and then we went out and we traveled all around the state and held public meetings to assess those findings and hear from Oregonians and urban, rural communities and all points in between. Give us your feedback, but what really is important to you in your community? What are those things that we need to do to make improvements in the state to help you and your community live and thrive? At the end of the process, really four main themes, and if you dig into the report, there's a lot more there, but I'm going to give you four because I think they're really important. The thing that rose number one for Oregonians across the state was the importance of preserving and maintaining the transportation system that we have today. We as Oregonians have put tens of billions of dollars into that asset and maintaining it. And we not only heard that in community, but when we do the Oregon's Values and Beliefs survey in a series of formats, we hear consistently from Oregonians that they care about the transportation system that we have today and they don't want to see it fall apart. But then three key themes came up in every community across Oregon. First and foremost was that Portland area congestion is impacting all corners of the state. And in fact, the one piece that really leapt to mind for me was we were in Medford, and when we posed the question, what's impacting you here most in your community? So being in Medford, what's impacting you? Before we could get the sentence out of our mouth, the room was yelling, Portland area congestion. And that's, you know, community by drive on a good day is 5 hours away from here. The second thing we heard in all communities from Portland, Eugene, John Day, Medford, Bend, Coos Bay, the need for transit. Everyone, regardless of urban or rural communities, are wanting more transit. It just looks different in different communities. So when we were here, we heard more bus service, greater frequency, you know, better options, more options to for the choice to make the trip. But if I live in Enterprise, I need a bus that works at night. I need a bus that works on the weekends so I can get to my job, so I can go to the grocery store, or maybe I can stay in my home and not have to move somewhere to get close to a medical facility. Real practical needs for transit. And then thirdly, seismic. We're at a point where Oregonians are well aware of the potential of a Cascadia subduction zone event, and they're also well aware that we have gaps in our system in terms of the supports of that system. But we heard seismic most loudly, not on the coast, where you would just naturally think we'd expect to hear it. It was actually in Central Oregon. The loudest voices around seismic preparedness were there, and the question was why? And I think the point that seemed pretty obvious when we were there, it's, well, when the event occurs and communities like here on the coast are going to be more severely impacted, where are we all going to go? We're all going to go over into Central Oregon, and they're very aware of that and feel the urgency to be prepared as a consequence. So at the end of their report, it actually dovetailed really nicely at the start of the legislative process that established the Joint Committee on Transportation. Governor Brown, Speaker of the House, and the Senate President came together and said, you know, we want to have a joint, it is a top priority for us to pass a package during the 2017 session, and we want to do it in a transparent, open public process, and we want to do it in a bipartisan fashion, and formed the Joint Committee. The first thing that they themselves did was they traveled around the state, much like the Vision Panel did, and again, heard the same themes from Oregonians all across the state about the needs. These four needs I've enumerated, but also the importance of improvements in bike and pedestrian infrastructure, urban and rural. Need for better intermodal facilities, so we're able to better move freight commerce around when you're really looking at how agricultural products are moving across the state. The need to operate and have funds to operate our state-owned dredge to maintain our state harbors so our commercial fishing fleets can safely get out to fish during the fishing season, and also to remove derelict vessels that are on the Columbia River, which is a huge problem for us right now. And also, what are those things can we do to start transitioning our fleet? Things like EV vehicles, and as is in the bill, there's actually rebates in the bill for that endeavor. At the end of the day, when the legislature passed the bill, they really incorporated a very robust bill that speaks from stem to stern to all modes of transportation. And as I've worked on and seen transportation packages across other states or even in Congress, that's highly unusual to have a package where you're dealing with maritime ports, aviation ports, maintenance of your transportation system, dealing with seismic congestion, dealing with airports. It's really extraordinary, ultimately, what our legislators did and the voices from our neighbors across the state, how they came together and everyone held together to really pass a robust package. Part of the details in the bill that are important to you all are those congestion area projects that the legislature focused in as part of their work group, and then also the legislature's requirement for the Oregon Department of Transportation and the OTC to apply for a value pricing pilot with the U.S. Department of Transportation's Federal Highway Administration. So those are critical pieces. There'll be ongoing public processes associated with those, but those were key elements to the bill that were important particularly for this community, but I would also say in addition to those transit components, those bike ped components, et cetera, on down the line. So that got us to where we were today. I sort of felt representative would be maybe here next to me and she could, you know, pick up the work of the legislative work group in detail, but I'm happy to answer questions before then that you may have.
Well, Carmen, I appreciate your being here to testify, and you made an important point. A number of people have characterize this as merely a freeway expansion. And you've reiterated the fact that a significant portion of the funding, in fact, about half of the funding is going towards bike, ped, and transit, which is also one of our key objectives here. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Appreciate the governor's leadership.
Terrific.
Yeah, it's really great to hear, you know, what the comments from the rest of the states are. We every year we prioritize the rest of the states in our legislative agenda, but to hear that they too are being affected by the congestion and have similar goals. In fact, when you're talking about transit, we all want better night and weekend transit as well. So there's a lot of things that we can share. And I really appreciate the governor and the legislature getting that package passed.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carl.
And maybe if I could add a point, because I think there are a few. Some of the public testimony from Portland left dramatic impressions. I know Senator Byers talked about knowing workers who've come into the city to clean office buildings and not be able to get home at night because there isn't enough transit available. The other part, which I have to make a strong impression about, was how neighborly Oregonians are across the state. And I think that it was a two-way street, that when you travel around the state and we talk to our neighbors across Oregon, they hear the concerns and the transportation problems impacting poor people in the Portland metro area. They also wanted to be heard and recognized for their needs and how they can get their products to market or how they get around as well, and that was valued. And I tip my hat to the legislators and the folks across the state who raised their voice, and we stuck together and held a package that addressed those needs. But also, I really think what an important effort this was, that we really heard and looked at each other's as our neighbors and really took everyone's needs to heart at the end of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll hear next from Kelly Brooks from ODOT. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hi. For the record, my name is Kelly Brooks. I work for the Oregon Department of Transportation here in Region 1, and I'm the Policy and Development Manager here in Region 1. So my unit has major projects within it, who's working very hard on the Rose Quarter project. So I am here today actually in a resource capacity similar to the PBOT staff in the room. So if it's okay with you, I'll step back and let the good representative come up and share her thoughts, but I'll stay in the room in case you have questions specifically for
Fantastic.
Me.
We appreciate that. Representative Susan McLean, thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Commissioners, for allowing us to come and testify today on your central city plan and your update on your transportation portion of that. And as I was sitting here listening to your other good work, I was curious to look at your goals. I found them on page one. And besides what the governor's office has shared with you as far as the goals of the transportation plan for the state and as far as what our citizens said statewide, that we really needed to take care of those pillars of a good, balanced transportation plan, the five goals that you have on page one, which is save lives, reduce injuries, limit traffic congestion or transit and freight vehicles so they can move more reliably, and that means limit that traffic congestion, reduce climate pollution and promote healthy lifestyles, and keep more money in the local economy as we spend less on vehicles, fuel, and create great places. And what I'm excited about coming to talk to you about today are three projects in the Portland area. And my name is Representative Susan McLean, and I represent Forest Grove, Cornelius, and Hillsboro. And I was really honored to serve on that joint committee, Transportation, Preservation, and Modernization. And as the governor's office and Carmen pointed out, we did follow the other commission around in the next 18 months, so we had like 3 years of open public houses, and we were at 12 or 13 different communities from Medford to Ontario, Hermiston, Newport, Eugene, Hillsboro, Portland, Gresham. We went to a lot of these places so that we could hear again and make sure that we'd understood what the message was. And we had also 23 cities and 3 counties in our area who put in a great deal of time talking about what will reduce congestion in a very practical and also in a good, sound, safe, environmental way. And 3 projects popped up. And those 3 projects, because it was an economic corridor and something that affected the entire state and all communities, were the Rose Quarter I-5, Highway 205, and Highway 217. And they are a system. They work together. And so if we were going to reduce congestion in an environmentally friendly way that's also going to continue to help with freight and our economic engine, we're really going to have to do those together. And so we dedicated funds in the package to those particular projects, including the Rose Quarter. Safety was a very important issue statewide on many levels, whether it's bike and ped pass to the schools or if it was trying to look for better corridors for bike and ped activity. We also wanted to make sure that in any type of road project that we also were considering safety because it was mentioned many times, especially in the Portland area. So safety for all means that it's really important for us to really look at and try to make sure that we are looking at the Rose Quarter and trying to stop the many crashes that are happening right now. It, by the way, has the highest rate of crashes in the state, that particular area that we're talking about. So besides improving safety on a very, very dangerous corridor, we also need to reduce crashes and delays, generally speaking, in that same area because this is an interstate freight and a very economically important corridor that gets much of our crops and our products out of state into other communities that are either international or national. So again, the Rose Quarter actually came popped to the top out of those three projects that the Rose Quarter was the number one that all folks were really concerned about us being able to address in the package. It was a situation where besides enhancing freight mobility, trying to reduce crashes and delay, we also were trying to help ourselves on the environmental side with the gas emissions and trying to really think about what were some of the projects that could do that. And we all know that this project is not a massive freeway type of project. This particular project or expansion, rather, is building new sections through lanes that will be built relatively short auxiliary lanes that will be between the interchanges that will improve the flow of traffic and allow vehicles to safely and efficiently get on and off the freeway or off the roads. So that's important because that helps us not have delays. An existing corridor in the central city and adding an auxiliary lane will not induce additional traffic in the same way that building a brand new, larger corridor would. This project will improve bicycle and pedestrian connectivity across the freeway, making it safer and easier to get around on foot and by bike and access to transit. And the project will help facilitate the City of Portland's plans for redeveloping some of your north and northeast quadrant and also the central city, allowing for a denser urban core. It's really important that these bottlenecks, which are causing a lot of idling and stopping and have got conditions that waste fuel and contribute much more in the greenhouse gas emissions. Research shows that management of these traffic operations, including congestion mitigation, which the governor's office also mentioned is part of the package, these strategies actually reduce severe congestion and increase traffic abilities, and it reduces the emissions at the same time. It's really important for us to realize that we have for the first time a dedicated fund for transit funding statewide. So that indicates that we are not just working on maintenance of our roads, our freeways, and our interchanges like these important three projects in the Portland area, but we continue to try and make sure that we have all kinds of opportunities and choices for people as they're making their ways around our community. Again, this money in the package is dedicated to those three projects. And that's what the money is dedicated for. That's what the money will be spent on. And so I know that there has been some push that you could use the money in different ways for different projects. These were the projects that not just the 23 cities and their mayors and JPAC and the three counties indicated were important in the metropolitan Portland area, but these were the projects that statewide popped to the top for the most important congestion projects. So that's where we put the money. And I think that's an important element. I think it's important to realize that we are dedicated to a balanced package, a balanced investment, and that we are working on transit, walking, biking, and maintenance of our roads and modernization of our freeways. And that we're going to have a very bright future, I think, with this $5.3 billion investment package over a 10-year period, and this is going to give us an opportunity for a seamless, balanced projects in the Portland metropolitan area, including the Rose Quarter, 217 and 205, with the state to support this bipartisan transportation investment. I'm happy to answer questions. I really tried to cut my testimony down because it seems like you have a lot of really important issues on your agenda today. I'm happy to answer questions.
Colleagues, questions for the representative?
Thank you for being here.
Oh, you bet.
Thank you. You answered one question that came up maybe 50 times last week, I think, and I just want to make sure I understand. Let's decide that, say that we decide we don't like the auxiliary lanes for whatever reason, and instead we'd like to take that funding and put it into something else. Can we do that?
Right now, the process is starting for the design. We know that we have not completed the design on the project and that ODOT and Portland are working together on that. You're going to use the money on this project because that's what it's dedicated to in the package. We have certain judiciary, you know, responsibilities of setting that out in any kind of a bill that we're going to bring forward. And so you're going to spend it on the freeway, but there's a lot of opportunity in the design phase to talk with ODOT about what the goals are and see if we have explored all opportunities for the very best ways to take care of those goals.
And as I mentioned up front, about half the funding here is bike, ped, and transit. Do we have leeway in terms of how we allocate those resources within those buckets?
Our budget is pretty specific as far as where the money is going to go. And so we have money in the package for bike and ped and safe pathways to school and additional trails. And we have other money that's set aside to do those things. And so, you know, we have other, you know, opportunities to take care of some of those issues that you've just mentioned.
Very good. I appreciate your being here today. Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you. I have one question, whether for you or Ms. Brooks. What we heard last week was that the crashes are usually not serious crashes. There might be property damage. You said it's the highest crash place in the state. If I could get, maybe can you address that, please?
Do you mind if I jump
sure,
in?
Sure, no, please.
Okay, for the record again, Kelly Brooks with ODOT. Yes, we do have a high number of crashes in this location. It is fair to say that the majority of those are sideswipe type crashes. I believe it was between 2010 and 2014, we had 690 of those, however. It's a lot of them. In the southbound direction in this area, it's been a top 5% spit site. That's the highest category that we have for crash locations. So that's how it's been elevated. It is unfair to say that we don't have any severe crashes, however. We've actually had, in that same time period, 2 fatalities, 7 serious injury crashes as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
One other statistic that I forgot to mention that I cut out, I want to put back in, and that is on the environmental side, that with these additions, both for safety and for actually, you know, accessing the most productivity in the corridor, there would be a savings of 2.5 million hours of travel time because people are not having to stop and idle as much. So again, it's helping us with air quality and other issues to make sure that the corridor is very functional.
Great. Excellent. Thank you for your testimony. Yeah. We appreciate it, both of you. Owen Roncelli, Wade Lang, and Matt Arnold, all from the North Northeast Quadrant SAC. And just out of curiosity, do we have anybody here representing the Freight Committee? They weren't sure whether they were going to be here or not. Very good. So I guess this will be our last invited testimony.
Great. Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners, thank you very much. My name's Wade Lang. I'm Vice President, Regional Manager for American Assets Trust, located in the Lloyd neighborhood. And I come here today in support of the Oregon Department of Transportation's I-5 Rose Quarter Improvement Plan. As one of the original members of the city's North Northeast Quadrant Plan Advisory Committee, I spent almost 2 years reviewing, discussing, debating the pros and cons and options of improving the I-5 corridor at the Rose Quarter. The I-5 improvement plan has always been about safety, and we on the advisory committee approach the discussion from that angle. throughout the Northeast Quadrant planning sessions, there was always time for public comment, public input. Once the Northeast Quadrant plan was completed, there was again numerous opportunities for the public to weigh in. To this day, I'm confident the committee collectively came up with the most reasonable improvement options based on the impacts to safety and cost. As a member of the boards of GoLloyd, Lloyd Eco District, the Lloyd Enhanced Service District, Locust, Oregon, and the Portland Streetcar, I have been intimately involved in the growth and needs of Lloyd. Beyond the safety improvements, the I-5 Rose Quarter plan brings to the freeway, it also creates a more sensible and safe way to move into and through Lloyd. The improvements proposed, including the LIDS, on-ramp access, bike throughways, all work to create a better flow for all types of traffic around I-5 and the Rose Quarter. With future development, including the Convention Center Hotel and much more residential growth, Lloyd needs to work diligently to see that the infrastructure keeps pace with our growth. The I-5 Rose Quarter Improvement Plan is a very smart first step in making Lloyd livable. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Hello, my name is Owen Ron Kelly, and I am the executive director of GoLloyd. We are a nonprofit transportation management association in the Lloyd neighborhood, and we've been around since 1994. We have 160 members, and we represent over 13,000 employees in Lloyd. We're proud of the results that we've been able to transitioning employees and residents and visitors out of their cars and into alternative modes. We actively promote and manage programs to shift people's travel behavior away from single-occupant vehicle trips, and we live and work in transportation demand management every day. Our organization and many others participate in the North-Northeast Quadrant Plan, which, to be honest, was exhausting. But it was also rewarding, too, because after 24 months and 19 SAC meetings, 14 subcommittee meetings, 4 open houses, 2 charrettes, and 3 community walks, it culminated in an agreed-upon plan. And that was the rewarding aspect of it. The plan involved a great amount of compromise. And just as an example, we looked at 70 different freeway alignment options to arrive at the one we have included in this plan. So please honor the public process of the volunteer time that citizens and city staff went through to get the plan to where it is today. The main reason GoLloyd is supporting this project is because of the surface transportation improvements. Half of the project's budget, as has already been stated today, is going towards those types of improvements. We are genuinely excited about the projects, not only because it's going to fix long, deficient, and unsafe bike and pedestrian facilities, but it'll also create new ones that don't exist today, like the Northeast Clackamas Crossing and the crossing at Hancock down to Lower Albina. Each of this will allow pedestrians and cyclists to avoid the Broadway box entirely. Everyone going through that area, no matter what mode you choose, whether you're on foot, on a car, on a bus, a streetcar, I think we can all acknowledge the fact that it's pretty lousy and potentially dangerous experience going through there. This project intends to address this and making it a safer place and more intuitive for all users. Northbound cyclists traveling east on Weidler have a grade separated crossing at Williams between Weidler and Broadway. South and eastbound cyclists coming down Vancouver will only have a small fraction of the traffic that they do today, because 70% of those vehicle turning movements will be eliminated from Broadway turning onto Vancouver. This will go a long way to reduce peak hour delays for streetcar as well. This project does a good job of reducing the number of vehicles traveling through the box. As an example, westbound traffic on Broadway will go through 4 fewer lights than they do today to get onto I-5 South. And a transit-only lane will be created on Wheeler to reduce bus delays crossing Broadway and Weidler. These are the exact types of improvements that we desperately need if we hope to encourage more active transportation use, both for timid and reluctant users, but also attracting new users that are arriving in Portland every day. The improvements included in this project are thoughtfully designed and community vetted, and will result in improved operations for all users. The allocation of funds is significant, but appropriate to the address the needs of the transportation system in the area. The project is being paid for everyone who drives a gas-powered vehicle in Oregon, too. Please don't buy into the fallacy that's being circulated that this is a freeway widening project. It's an investment in our multimodal transportation system that will transform access for all users in the area for an area that needs it for a really long, long time. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you for your service on the committee.
Thanks, Owen.
Good afternoon.
Hello, Mayor, Councilors. My name is Matthew Arnold. I'm the Director of Urban Design and Planning for Sarai Architects here in Portland. I also am the former chair of the Portland Bicycle Advisory Committee, and it was as chair of that committee that I also served on the Northeast Quadrant Steering Committee. You're here today discussing a major transportation project in central Portland, but I would submit, as I think Owen was just getting at, this project, the question really isn't, should we widen I-5? The real question is, what is this city, I would say, what is the Portland that we want to become? As you all are aware, Portland has experienced a marked increase in auto traffic in recent years, right? 11,000 additional auto trips per day were recorded in 2016. Meanwhile, bike commuting has slipped from a mode split of 7.2% in 2013 to 6.3% in 2016, kind of a bruise for a city that touts itself as America's most friendly in terms of bikes. Carpooling and transit ridership, especially by bus, have also declined. The North-Northeast Quadrant area is expected to grow by 8,000 residents and 9,000 employees over the next 15 to 20 years. So how are those folks going to commute? Where are they going to shop? How are they going to access services? More broadly, as we think about this district, how do we stitch Lower Albina and close-in Northeast Portland back together with the Rose Quarter? How do we seamlessly connect the Lloyd District with downtown? How do we transform this area into a tirelessly vibrant neighborhood again? During the formation of the North-Northeast Quadrant Plan, we propose answering those questions with compact, sustainable urbanism and heavy doses of active transportation. The project components that I and most of my colleagues focused on and fought for were those that would provide the most livability return on this significant investment. The North-Northeast Quadrant Plan, which this council actually adopted in 2012, puts forth great local solutions, better design and development controls, transit enhancements, redundant bike and pedestrian facilities, a new signature bridge at Clackamas Street. Most eye-catching, maybe the lids proposed to cover I-5 in the district, and frankly, in my opinion, those lids should probably be a lot larger if you really want to promote that kind of continuous urbanism. But these are the infrastructure improvements that will support not only the kind of redevelopment and travel patterns that we want to see, but also the 24/7 activity and level of community to which we should aspire to in our central city. As you all weigh our city's official position and commitments to this district, I ask that you focus on the local and sustainable return on investment that the citizens of Portland have come to expect. Said differently, it's not our job to build roads and infrastructure, it's our job to build communities and to foster and support those communities. And I ask for your strong leadership in tackling that job. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you, all three of you, for being here. I understand somebody from the Freight Committee did show up. Is that correct? Come on up.
Just the staff?
That's fine.
Okay, sure.
Name for the record, please.
Okay.
Thank you, Carmen.
My name is Bob Player. I work for the Portland Bureau of Transportation. I am the Freight Planning Coordinator for the city, and I also staff the Portland Freight Committee. Our Chair, Pia Welch, and Vice Chair, Rahana Ansari, were unable to attend today. So we did submit a letter, or they did submit a letter for the record. So just to reiterate some of the points that were made earlier today from some of the folks. They suggested to implement the Rose Quarter project as a complete package that's been recommended. And the PSC members, they served previously on a North-Northeast Quadrant planning process. They wanted to recognize that I-5 interchange is one of the most congested in the state, and mainly to honor the commitments that were made and recommendations for the Northeast Quadrant Plan Stakeholder Committee and also House Bill 2017. So they were the main points they wanted to make in the letter. So they support the current package.
Thank you.
And I can answer any questions to staff.
Colleagues, any particular questions? Very good. And last but not least, we'll ask Art Pierce and Mauricio Leclerc. If you, from PBOT, do you have colleagues? I don't know if you have specific questions.
As
a resource, does anybody have any immediate questions? All right. Very good. They're here in case we need them. Carla, let's bring up the next people from the list from last week. I know we had an extensive list of people. My guess is many are not here today, but let's take them first because we'd made that promise that we would. Are there people in the overflow room or not?
Yes, we're going to. I've got 38 people have checked in from the 7th to speak today.
Very good.
And I have two new ones, and I also want to let anybody know if you are here from the 7th and you did not check in with staff, please do so
out in front of the main council chamber. We do have seats in the main chamber. It looks like we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, security's going to let them
security
know.
Will deal with that. Yeah. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay, so the first three off the previous list are number 39, Micah M., number 42, Rose Kowalski, and number 50, Cal Toth. And they'll be followed by 51, Mark Velke, 53, Brian Newman, and 54, Christy White.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and City Council. Thanks for having me. My name is Micah Muskell, and I represent the Audubon Society of Portland. I'm not going to repeat the testimony from last week that my colleagues gave, but wanted today to show support for an amendment that Commissioner Udaly proposed to expand the green roof surface area, 100% Audubon supports that. We appreciate efforts and conversations that City Council had about how we could potentially improve the different green policies that are included in the Central City Plan. We think that's a great step. And we also hope that some of the other discussions that took place last week could move to council directing BPS staff to think about how we can improve some of the other green policies, whether it's the Willamette Greenway lighting standard that could potentially be looked at for the whole city or for the whole central city, or for such things as how we can move current development that's in the 50-foot greenway but not river dependent, how we can create mechanisms to eventually move those out of the greenway if they aren't river dependent.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Rose Kowalski. I'm a volunteer at the Architectural Heritage Center of the Bosco Milligan Foundation and a resident of Washington Park. I apologize for my lateness to the table today. I was going to see if I could race out and feed the parking meter, but I'll just be quick here.
Don't worry. Commissioner Saltzman's not here anymore.
Maybe you could, yeah. My original focus in coming to testify was to have been on saving the Rose Garden views of Mount Hood and the skyline with vegetation management, but that's been well addressed, even though I support that wholeheartedly, I'm going to speak to the larger issue today of protecting views with height limitations and reductions, which I understand is now starting to be referred to as right zoning. To me, right zoning in this case means to lower heights to 100 feet. In particular, I feel strongly that maximum heights in the West End should be right zoned to 100 feet. But in a larger context, I hope to illustrate with my little handout how right zoning maximum heights to 100 feet in order to protect iconic views will have effects that go far beyond the sale of picture postcards. One example of the synergistic effects of right zoning maximum heights might be that by deterring demolition of historic properties, those saved properties could be subdivided into multiple well-designed, sustainable living units, which will introduce new affordable housing while protecting the character and the appearance of the neighborhood. All of this, which you can see on my little handout, all of this and saving the irreplaceable views in one fell swoop. Please do remember that the greenest building is the one that's already built. Thank you.
Thank you, and perfect timing. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Cal Toth. I've spoken here before, resident of Goose Hollow, secretary of our board.
Just 1 second. If you need to run and feed your meter, you don't have, I mean, it's very polite of you.
Thank you so much.
I did hear Dan say something about he's running towards your car. I did hear that.
Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt. We'll start you over again.
Okay, so I get an extra 15 seconds.
Absolutely. You bet.
Okay, so Portland's historic views have stimulated our economy in countless ways for decades. We should not underestimate their value or trade them away. I am grateful for Mayor Wheeler for fighting to save the views that we've talked about, several people have talked about, and I'll mention something about, in particular about the Vista Bridge, the view of the Vista Bridge, which must also be protected. I encourage you to follow the example of numerous councils in the past. Please continue protecting our iconic views. I'm just repeating things many people have said, but it's important to many of us. As others have confirmed, the West Quad SAC was weighted heavily in favor of developers. They should have recused themselves, a number of other things. They lobbied for their self-interests, and they therefore biased the recommendations back in 2015 and 2016 to the BDS and to City Council. Furthermore, in response to the Ombudsman's demand, they did not declare their conflicts of interest. A few developers have obfuscated them, and others failed not to respond at all. And thank you, Commissioner Fish. I wish you were here for addressing these issues during last week's hearing, agreeing that city policies governing conflicts of interest, ethics, and committee formation need to be tightened up. Now, I'd like to point out one particular case of some allocated height increases in the plan that enable construction of the few strategically located high-rise buildings in Goose Hollow. Is this microphone doing the right thing?
Yes, sir.
Or am I doing the wrong thing? Okay, thanks. Once constructed, these buildings will block views of Vista Bridge for the public while creating spectacular private views for the privileged few who buy into these high-rises. This is called privatizing views. When developers give their testimonies today, I encourage City Council to ask whether their properties, if developed, would block views of Vista Bridge or Mount Hood, and whether they were members of the West Quad SAC, and whether they declared their conflicts, and if not, why they did not. Now, do I have 15 more seconds?
You can get 15 more.
Okay. 4 years ago, I was part of a movement that took back our neighborhood from certain members of the top 10% who were controlling our Goose Hollow board, routinely voting in their financial interests. I alert the council members that some of these past members continue to discredit us currently on the board, partly because we have strengthened our conflict of interest and ethics policies, which undermine their financially driven pursuits. That's a closing statement I think is very important. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Next three, please.
Oh, we've had a few more people check in, so the next three are 51, 52, and 53, Mark Velke, Fred Leeson, and Brian Newman, and they'll be followed by Christy White, Will Ives, and Zoe Lynn Powers, 54, 5, and 5, 6.
Good afternoon. Sorry.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Mark Velke, and I live in the Goose Hollow area. I strongly encourage all of you to support the amendments from Mayor Wheeler to save the views of the Salmon Springs Fountain in the Japanese Garden, and also Commissioner Fritz's bridgehead amendment to Lower Heights. I'm against the privatizing of views in this draft. I attended the Planning Commission hearings. Most testimony was outrage over views being blocked by increased heights, public views that define Portland. These views should be fiercely protected for the public. Instead, they are being given away only for the rich. Since I'm not rich, I won't be able to see Mount Hood from the Willamette River. I will only be able to see the snow cap of Mount Hood from the Vista Bridge, and I'll need to stand in the middle of the street underneath the Vista Bridge just to see the arch. But the rich people who live in the buildings blocking these views will have private views of these Portland landmarks. I'm still extremely concerned about the conflict of interest that went on in the West Quadrant Plan Stakeholder Advisory Committee. I'm very glad that the city is working towards trying to make sure something like this does not happen in the future, but that does not correct the current problem with the West Quadrant Plan Stakeholder Advisory Committee and how it relates to CC 2035 now. You have not approved CC 2035 yet, so you still have time to fix this. I'm asking you, as my elected representatives, to take action. It is not rocket science. All you have to do is look into who owns the properties in the West Quadrant that got height increases, and if they were Stakeholder Advisory Committee members that were trying to line their pockets with more money, you, at the very least, need to lower the heights on those properties back to the original heights. I'm guessing the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability can give you a list of which properties got a height increase, and the rest of the info is available in the public record at the Multnomah County Tax Office on the other side of the river. I'm pretty sure you do not want to be a part of, and beyond the record, letting these clear-cut cases of conflict of interest take place when you could have taken action to prevent them. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And I'll just reiterate what was, I think, more eloquently stated by Commissioner Fish last week. Through this hearing process, we basically start with a clean slate. We certainly take into account what advisory committees are telling us, but what you described, the situation, is certainly well on the record, part of the record. We are all reasonable, intelligent people, and we will evaluate the complete record based on our own views and our own perspectives. Your point is in no way discounted, and I appreciate the work that Commissioner Udaly and Commissioner Fish are doing to make sure that these kinds of things don't happen in the future. But I also want to reassure people that from my perspective, I view this as though this is the first time I'm looking at it. And I'm going to use my own resources, and I'm going to rely heavily on public input. I'm going to rely on expertise from our staff. I'm going to rely on other voices in the community to help me guide or help guide me to the right decisions here. So I appreciate your saying that. But those are advisory committees, and that's how I view them.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you.
And just so you know, I have requested those maps to all the site-specific locations, so we're following.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate it.
Thanks for your testimony. Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Fred Leeson. I'm a board member and past president of Architectural Heritage Center. Once upon a time, a long, long time ago, in a city near and dear, we had a spectacularly scenic entrance to downtown Portland coming in from the west. When you came through the Vista Bridge tunnels, driving east on a sunny day, you had a beautiful sky, sunshine, and a fabulous view of Mount Hood. Everybody loved it. In 1977, your predecessors on the city council considered whether to protect that view, and they decided no, development's more important. So when you drive through that tunnel today, what you see is the Coin Center Tower building with its tacky blue tin shed sitting on the roof. Folks, that was an extremely bad trade-off. Mayor Wheeler, I'm deeply appreciative that you put Salmon Street Springs View Corridor back on the agenda. If we live in this beautiful place and we can't enjoy it and we can't see it, it's no longer as special. You'll get pushback from property developers. I suspect there are some in the room. My answer to them, and I hope your answer will be, is that no investment comes without risks. If you think you can't make as much money building here now, take your money and invest it somewhere else. The staff and the Planning Commission applied the ESEE using dollars and cents and sold out this view for dollars. I ask them, I ask anybody, to what is the dollar value of the quality of life? You know, we elect you city council people members to represent the public interest. You do a very good job of that. I'm well aware, and you're well aware, there are many times when the public interest fits hand in glove with the private interest. But on Salmon Street Springs and our protected view corridors, we need you to stand up for the public interest. I hope you will do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Good afternoon. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Mayor and Commissioners, my name is Brian Newman. I'm Vice President of Campus Development at Oregon Health and Science University. I'm here specifically to speak about changes to the parking code, and I've passed out a letter that's from Portland State University and OHSU, although Dan Zalko couldn't be here today. The Central City 2035 plan reduces the maximum parking ratio in South Waterfront for medical centers and universities from 2.4 spaces per 1,000 square feet of development to two spaces, reducing our total allowed parking by thousands of spaces. OHSU participated in that process, and we support that change, just to be clear. However, we are concerned about changes to the preservation parking code, and we have joined with Portland State University to recommend a minor amendment for your consideration. As you know, we're building our campus over 30 years in phases, and we manage parking differently than a property owner or a developer. We manage parking as a campus-wide resource and utilize shared parking structures that serve multiple buildings. When our three new buildings open in South Waterfront late next year, we'll have 1.3 parking spaces per thousand, about half of what the code allows now. Even with providing extremely low-cost bus passes, which is about $6 a month for our employees, and we actually pay our employees who ride their bikes to work, 1.3 spaces is too low to run a major medical center. OHSU serves Portland and the rest of the state, and about 50% of our patients come from outside the metro area. So most of them drive because they're coming from Down Valley or the coast or Central Oregon. Unfortunately, the parking code as drafted removes our ability to come back later and build shared parking facilities. So when it becomes time to catch up, to get closer to two spaces per thousand, the regulations as drafted will prevent it. Operational impacts aside, the unintended consequence is that we'll be incentivized actually to build, maximize our parking every time we build, as opposed to coming back later. And our hope, actually, by deferring those investments, is that over time, we'll be able to provide less parking, not more, and actually underbuild campus-wide. The simple amendment that you have, and I just have 1 second left, that you have in front of you would allow us to aggregate our square footage and defer parking, underpark, in other words, and come back later and add parking per our master plan or per our phasing plan as we have scheduled. In closing, this amendment is consistent with the spirit of the parking code, and in no time would we be allowed to build more than two spaces per thousand. So it still preserves that lowered cap that we've agreed to. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
And I'm going to need some clarification from staff about exactly what you're asking.
Sure.
For the 22 years that I worked at OHSU, the lack of parking on the hill was a significant problem because the buses just don't run in the middle of the night when I would get off shift. So I want, and I think we don't have enough parking in South Waterfront now. So that's, I think it's a more complicated issue and one that I'll take up with staff. Thank you for your testimony.
Thanks.
Very good. Next three, please.
Okay. We're going to ask for Commissioner Steve Novick, 54, Christy White, 55, Will Ives, I believe is the last name. And then we'll go with 56, 57, and 58, Zoe Lynn Powers, Soren Impe, and John Hollister.
Good afternoon, and welcome back.
Mr. Mayor, commissioners, I, of course, am here to talk about the Rose Quarter Project. Medical research has indicated over the past several years that surgery for lower back pain is always expensive and often ineffective, whereas physical therapy, which costs less, is often effective. Research has indicated that widening freeways to reduce congestion is expensive and often ineffective, and congestion pricing is often effective at reducing congestion. So just as a responsible doctor would not go directly to surgery for lower back pain, I think that responsible transportation managers would not go to freeway widening when they have the option of tolling of congestion pricing. So what I would suggest to the state, and to Commissioner Saltzman's already sort of done this, is why don't you try congestion pricing first, and if that does as much as you thought that the freeway widening was going to do, let's spend the $450 million on something else. And Lord knows we could spend on a lot of other stuff. You just heard a couple of weeks ago another explanation of the hundreds of millions of dollars we're behind in basic street maintenance. There's hundreds of millions of dollars of traffic safety projects that we have to implement and bike ped projects. There's huge needs for transportation dollars. Now, I know that the city wouldn't necessarily get all of that $450 million if the state didn't spend it in this project, but let's say maybe we get half of it. Commissioner Saltzman, I'd suggest that you ask PBOT to come up with the best combination of bike, ped, and maintenance projects they could for $225 million. And if that would have greater value than the bike, ped, and safety elements of the Rose Quarter project, then say, hold on, don't do this project until you've done congestion pricing. That's what I would suggest. And so that's my two cents. By the way, I also wanted to add that over the past 8 months, I've had the opportunity to talk to many Portlanders for justice, and all of them have told me that Joe Walsh does not represent them in any way, shape, or form.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I am Christy White representing Michael Menasche. We're asking the council to restore the height taken from Mr. Menasche's properties during the PSC hearings. There are two blocks at issue. Both are highlighted in the materials that were previously sent and are being handed out. Site 1 has a current base height of 350 feet with bonus to 425, and the same applies to Site 2. The PSC reduced those heights to 125 on Site 1 and 250 on Site 2, with no bonus on Site 1. This is a loss of 225 feet in base height alone. Side note, we're not in a view corridor. The Site 1 is surrounded on three sides with greater heights, leaving it in a bowl with very little opportunity to peek over and around the other sites, significantly devaluing that block. The stated purpose of this significant height reduction is preservation of the historic district. That reasoning just can't pass muster. The district was nominated in 1989, as you heard earlier today. In the nomination paperwork, the zoning on Site 1 was recognized as mid to high-rise development and high-density apartments with allowable FAR up to 9-to-1. The height was 350 feet at the time of nomination or shortly thereafter based on the 1991 zoning maps. The city found that the current height and density of 350 feet and 9-to-1 was consistent with the historic district and its preservation when it was nominated and established. It can't be made inconsistent now. That would be to revise the very history and rationale that established the district in the first place. The city then went through a substantial planning exercise with a stakeholder committee to evaluate preferred redevelopment options in the district. The city's process identified Site 1 as a, quote, primary potential opportunity site and modeled it with a slender tower over a podium. Importantly, the taller slender form is also repeated and updated on page 98 of CC 2035's recommended draft. So the city's plan still recognizes the advantages of height in shaping a more delicate building form, but the language in that same plan takes that height away. So the PSC recommendation is not consistent with the history of the historic designation, the planning exercises under that designation, or the future of the site as envisioned by the city. So we ask you kindly to restore the heights to Site 1 and Site 2.
Thank you. Thank you both for your testimony. Steve,
you're welcome. I also, the next person you're going to call is Tim Eddy from Henneberry Eddy Architects, who has an architectural analysis and opportunities for you. He had to leave. He was here last time and didn't get through this time. Can I leave this letter with
yes.
you into
yeah,
the record?
Absolutely. And for folks who don't want to testify in person, the record is open. So people can certainly send email in lieu of public testimony.
Great, what is his letter? What's the topic of it?
I'm glad you asked. I can read it in 2 minutes if you'd like me to.
I just need to know what the topic is.
The topic is the architectural opportunities with the higher heights to allow you to back off of the Chinese garden. So it's much like Ms. Richter's testimony regarding the Roseland, and what height opportunity gives you on this block is to push away from the Chinese garden, maintain that density and the unit yield you would get out of that while giving the Chinese garden more air, space, and light, and a better architectural form.
Excellent. Yeah, please definitely give it to Carla, and we'd all like to read it. I certainly would. Thank you.
Okay. Was there a will, Inez? That's the one you said. I'm sorry. Okay, so we'll go with 56, 57, 58, Zoe Lynn Powers, Soren Impe, and John Hollister. And they'll be followed by 67, Joshua Pesos, 68, Douglas R. Allen, and 70, Cliff Weber. And again, if you did not check in out front, please do so.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Zoe Powers on behalf of Zeidel Yards. We're requesting two amendments to help facilitate the Zeidel Yards master plan, particularly related to the adaptive reuse of the existing barge building. The first relates to the eastern segment of the barge building, and for reference, there's a site plan attached to the August 17th letter that is being handed to you and that was previously sent. The wrinkle in the current code is that the greenway setback line, which is 100 feet from top of bank, runs through the eastern section of the barge building, precluding any additional height there. The reason for this anomaly is that the top of bank line was originally drawn up and around the man-made slipway that launched the Zeidel barges. This creates a second setback line along the north-south axis, where there's already an east-west setback from the river. The oddly located north-south setback is not a setback from the river, which also runs north-south. Although it's not a river setback, the code makes it the basis for a river setback height restriction that then unnecessarily applies to the barge building. To allow the adaptive reuse illustrated in the Zidell Master Plan, we could either redraw the top of bank line on the zoning map to allow it to continue along the river's edge, or, as our letter proposes, we could allow the Design Commission to review a height adjustment and design review for the eastern section of the barge building.
So just so I understand, are you referring to the issue around the slipway? Is that what you're focused
Correct.
On? So it's the north side of the slipway that's being treated.